My name is Keith, and I am an alcoholic. Whoa. Man, there's shivers going all over me just hearing all you folk out there. You look really good. I'd like to remind everybody that there is a special needs section over here. We'd like to respect that. Those people need those special places. Also on this side, there is the signing, whatever it is. I think I need a moment of silence. Would you share that with me? Thank you. I am not Patty W. Patty W. is not feeling as well as she might. She's my service sponsor, and she asked me to fill in for her. And I have never... I've got a couple of resentments about it, but I've never not done what she's asked me to do. Thus introduces our topic, resentment, the number one offender. And I thought it was just Patty W. I have a home group. It's in Moab, Utah, and it's called the Moab Group. There's about 8 people that attend. I figure I've got about 5 years worth of meetings right here. I need to do some housekeeping here. We're going to read the anonymity statement. There may be some here who are not familiar with our tradition of personal anonymity at the public level. I quote, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. End quote. Thus, we respectfully ask that AA speakers and AA members not be photographed, videotaped, or identified by their full name on audio tapes and in published or broadcast reports of our meetings. The assurance of anonymity is essential in our effort to help other problem drinkers who may wish to share our recovery program with us. And our tradition of anonymity reminds us that AA principles come before personalities. This meeting will be taped. The tapes are available over at the sales tape booth in Hall E of the Convention Center. If you're not sure where that is, just ask the people that are out in the foyer there. They seem to be quite helpful in moving us around. I've read this thousands of times. I'm going to see if I can get through it without making a mistake in front of all of you. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. Okay, let's move on with the program here and introduce our first speaker. I'd like to introduce TJ from New York. Thank you.
My name is TJ. I'm an alcoholic and an addict. Wow. Is this cool or what? Is this cool or what?
Woo!
This is my first international convention, and I've been meaning to get to one of these for 20 years now. And the first time I even knew there was an international convention was 20 years ago. I was in rehab, and it was AA's 50th anniversary, and I was in rehab, and it wasn't my first time in rehab. And I watched it on TV, and I thought, wow, that's cool. I don't remember what city it was in. I don't remember many, many things about that 28 days. But I remember thinking, I'd like to go to one of those one day. And it took me a while, but here I am. And it's awesome. It really is. I was at the party last night in the park. And part of my drinking was I never, and even before my drinking, part of my life was I never felt a part of anything. I never felt comfortable anywhere. And I'm a part of this, man. You know, I'm a part of this AA. And what an awesome feeling it is to be, it was and is now to stand here and yesterday to be in the park talking to people from Finland and Brazil and Poland and a million other places, you know, and all sober and all dancing and all happy and all smiling and people I'd never seen before grabbing me and hugging me and, you know, I couldn't believe it. And I still can't believe it, how it is that the best thing that ever happened to me in my life was that I pissed on my pants and fell on my face and drank like a pig and I got here. You know? When I got here, when I first got to meetings, and I got sober in the Bronx, and I see a lot of my original Bronx homie, sober homies here, but this was in, okay, for the Bronx. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I got a resentment on the way up here because my original sponsor, I ran into him over here, George N. George, where are you back there? And George said to me, TJ, be careful of your language now. Remember, be careful of your language. You know, because when you're from the Bronx, some words slip out that are no big deal in the Bronx that may be a bigger deal in other parts of the world. So now I have a resentment, so I have to be careful. But I remember when I first got to AA in 81 or 82, before I got sober, thinking, oh, my God, my life is over. My life is over. I got to sit here with this. And there's a guy in my home group, Phil, Liquor Store Phil, because he used to own a liquor store. And I'm going to quote him. He said, I got to hang around here with this bunch of tambourine-banging holy rollers talking about inventories and loving me till I love myself. And, oh, God. You know, and I remember thinking that. Oh, my God. Because I was in my 20s still when I got here for the first time. I was cool. You know, and I got to hang around with all these guys. And they all look like Archie Bunker to me, you know. You know, they were all kind of my age now. Or at least they seem to be. With short white hair, gray hair, and, you know, and I thought, my life is over. It's over. Oh, what? How did this happen to me? And like I said, I know now that it's the best thing that ever happened to me. And I am blessed to be here. I am blessed that for some reason I drank. You know, I used to say to my original sponsors over there, why am I an alcoholic? Is it my genes? It's genetic. And he looked at me, used to look at me and say, TJ, you're an alcoholic because you drank like a pig. That's why you're an alcoholic. No one held you down. No one forced you to do it. You did it to yourself. And today I'm so grateful for that. I'm so grateful. I'm going to say it again. It's the best thing that ever happened to me to be a part of this, to be a part of something. It's like no other place in the world. No other thing in the world, no other group in the world. You know, in the park yesterday, people of all ages, all shapes and sizes, black and white and Polish and French and Brazilian and male and female and gay and straight and all just hanging together, caring about each other, partying, having fun. It's like nothing else in the world. And couldn't the world take a great lesson from this? You know, couldn't the world take a great lesson from this? You know? Because it is about love. It is about love, you know? And so now I'm going to segue into resentment. I'm going to go from love to resentment, you know? Because and I don't know how I'm going to do that, but I'm going to do it. You know, when I'm here in this room and when I'm in any one of the hundreds and thousands of AA meetings I've been to all over this country, this North America, in Canada and in the U.S., and I sit in a meeting, it's easy for me to love you, you know? I love everyone in this room. And I remember when I first heard that, I said, oh, Jesus. But you know what? I do. You know, I do. And I trust that you love me. My experience has been that you love me. You may not like me. You may not sometimes approve of me. But you want the best for me. You want me to stay sober and you want me to be happy, joyous, and free. And that's great. My problem is, and my resentments come when I leave the meeting, you know. If I could stay at meetings all day and bring y'all home with me, I wouldn't have resentments. My resentments come because I have to deal with the real world, you know. I was at a great meeting this morning, and I was reminded something I don't hear too much these days anymore is that we suffer from a threefold disease. Physical, mental, and spiritual. And we get sick spiritually, then mentally, and then physically, and then we recover in the reverse. That's what I used to hear when I first came around. We recover first physically, and then becomes the process of the mental recovery, and then last, and most importantly, the spiritual recovery. And resentments for me, and my struggle with my resentments is about my spiritual recovery. I want to be happy, joyous, and free. I want to laugh, dance, and sing. I want to be a lover. I'm tired of fighting. I'm so tired of fighting. It seems like, you know, my drinking and drugging was all about fighting. It was a constant battle. A constant battle with the whole world. With the whole world. And growing up where I grew up, and growing up gay where I grew up, because I'm gay, made it even worse. You know, I had to fight everyone all the time. If you looked at me crooked, or you thought that I might be a wimp or a wuss, I had to fight you. We were going to fight. I had to fight. And for a long time in sobriety, there was that fight too. You know, all my character defects are about this. My hands go up. The fear kicks in and my hands go up. And it becomes, what are you looking at? I know you. What do you want? No, and that, and that happens at home, too. You know, that happens at home with the ones who love me most. But it happens all over. And that's what all my character defects are about. That's what it is. It's the fear kicks in, and then everything else comes. The impatience, the anger, the resentments, the all of that ugly stuff. And the fighting kicks in. And I want to be happy, joyous, and free. I want to laugh, dance, and sing. I don't want to be angry. I don't want to be pissed off. The great thing about being sober is having that clarity. None of this made any sense to me when I'm just miserable. And I have a bad temper. And I'm pissed off. That's who I am. That's how I am. You got a problem with that? You know? Don't piss me off. You know, I come from a long line of Irish Catholic alcoholics. You know, resentments are what we do. You know, resentments are what we do. I mean, my mother's father, who was a longshoreman on the New York docks, and I've heard stories about him. He had the reputation, he was a big strapping Irishman, a 6'4", 250-pound Irishman who worked on the docks, who drank a quart of whiskey every day, and his reputation was, don't mess with him, because he'll get you. Sooner or later, he will get you. And I was a chip off that block. Oh, yeah, okay. All right. Sure, no problem. And I'd get you. And I don't want to be that person today, but that's how I'm hardwired, I think. That's who I am in my very gut. That's how I'm hardwired. So a lot of the reason, I'm so grateful I'm here, and I'm so grateful that I can keep coming here and coming here. I'm so grateful that the 12 steps has practiced these principles in all my affairs. I'm so grateful that after 20 years of sobriety, I don't have to be good. I mean, I don't have to be perfect. I mean, I have to be good. Or at least try to be good. But I don't have to be perfect, you know. All the things that I've learned here and I continue to learn here that make me so much, you know, I have found, for example, the more meetings I go to, the better I feel. And I remember saying to George, I don't know if you remember this, I think I'm addicted to meetings. And he said something profound to me. He said, shut up and sit down. And listen to the speaker. You know, but I have found the more meetings I go to, the better I feel. The more meetings I go to, the better people like me. The better I get along at home with my significant other. The better I get along at work with the people I have to deal with every day. The better I get along with my fellow drivers on the highways and byways of the world. The better I get along, period. And that, you know, that's about resentments and recovery for me. My good buddy Richie from the Pocantico Hills Men's Step Meeting in Tarrytown, New York, said something just a couple of days ago, and I love Richie, sober a long time, he's got an awesome story. He said something, and maybe you heard this before, I've never heard it before. He said, we alcoholics injure easily and suffer poorly. Me? And that's what my resentments are all about. You know, I can get on the elevator and somebody looks at me and I take it personally. And I have a resentment now. And I don't even know what's going on in this poor slob's head. But I have a resentment. I'm going up the elevator and what the hell is his problem? What, has he got an attitude? What, he's going to like me? See? You know? And I know now, see, the great gift I have now is that I know it's me. You know, I want to be happy, joyous, and free, and the reason why I'm not is me. It's not what you did, or what you said, or what she said, or what she did. It's me. It's my fear and my anger. It's my inability to deal in a healthy way with some of that stuff. It's my unwillingness to make amends promptly. Oh, I'll make the amends, but I got to have a resentment for a while first. And sort through over and over in my head why I really said what I said and how they deserved my finger in their face or whatever it was. And then today I have the great gift of this program where somebody I love who you know, from a meeting or my sponsor who I love will say, King, nah. Nah, think about it. Or I'll go to a meeting with this stuff in my head and somebody will share exactly. How many of you have had that experience? Yeah. Somebody will share exactly what's going on in my head and I'll go like, oh. And I remember when that first couple of times that happened to me, I figured, okay, who told them? All right, who told them? How did they know that? Wow. You know? I at the meeting this morning, the young lady also talked about restless, irritable, and discontent, you know, from the doctor's story in the old big book. And I thought how much that describes my resentments and what my resentments do to me. You know, what my petty little, and I see that today, but it's amazing how sometimes I still have a hard time letting go of it. I see how petty and silly they are. And I see how only I suffer from them, you know. You're not suffering because I have a resentment against you, are you? No. You don't even know it. You know, and yet I'll hold on to that and hold on to that and worry it to death before I let it go. I don't want to be restless, irritable, and discontent today. I don't want to have my hands up, you know. My buddy Jim, also from that Pocantico Hills men's group, who is a practicing Hindu, was, and I don't know where this fits in my little story about resentments, but I love it, so I'm going to throw it in there anyway. It was in India last year, as Hindus are supposed to do once in their life, and threw himself in the Ganges River, and they went to hear the great guru speak, and the guru was asked, the guy who meditated alone in a cave for 30 years, and he was asked, what's the secret to life? And his answer was, be nice. And I, of course, I thought, what a genius he is. Took him 30 years. what a real genius, alone. But I want to be nice today. You know, I believe that today. I want to be nice. And to do that, I need to constantly work on my, you know, it's, there's anger here, you know. And anger, I've learned here, is healthy. It's what you do with it that counts. And my resentments are all about my anger, and my anger is all about my fear, and I know that today. And if I can trace it back and work on it, I have a chance of being happy, joyous, and free. I really want to be one of those people who are calm. I really want to be one of those people who don't spike, you know, in the car, at work, or at home, who stays calm and loving and nice. That's my goal. That's who I want to be. And that's what I'm struggling on and working on. I can do that here. I'm not real calm inside here right now looking at y'all. But I can do that at meetings, and I can do that in AA. And my struggle is to do that out there in the real world with all those crazy earth people. And you know, I'm starting to babble now. How am I doing time-wise?
You're doing great.
All right, good. Oh, looks like I'm wrapping this up quick. But my struggle is to learn how to do this in the real world, to learn how to love earth people, to learn how to, you know, how to give them the regard and the forgiveness that I give all the people I love in AA. And that's a big struggle for me. It really is a struggle for me. That's why I come to meetings. That's why I keep coming to meetings. I've been sober a while now, but I got to keep coming to meetings. There is, you know, everyone talks about their inner child. I have an inner psycho. An inner psycho child, you know. And as long as I keep coming to meetings, that inner psycho child is kept quiet, you know, keeps his mouth shut. You know, I've learned here that I'm not responsible for my first thought. My first thought is generally an alcoholic thought. I'm responsible for my second thought. I'm responsible for my actions. You know, I'm responsible, and I've learned that what I generally need to do is let that first thought pass, keep my mouth shut, and wait for a second thought. Sometimes it takes a while for the second thought to come, and that's good, because that gives it a little time to diffuse. But I'm responsible for my actions today. And my actions, even in spite of my thoughts, are generally loving and caring. Like I mentioned before, I don't have a lot of the resentments I had when I got here, you know, against the whole world. My resentments are, you know, I was thinking about this meeting on the way up here in the last couple of days, and who do I resent today? Where are my resentments most dangerous to me today? And they're at home in my relationship with my significant other. It's, you know, I heard early on, you know, being in a relationship is like putting a microscope on your character defects. That's my story. I don't know about you, but that's my story. And it's at home that I need to be most careful. It's with my mom and dad, who are in their 80s today, that I need to be most careful. It's with, I have six siblings, a nice Bronx Irish Catholic family. There are seven of us. It's with my siblings, the people I love the most, and who I know, beyond a shadow of a doubt, love me the most, that I have to be most careful of today, and I have to work on today. I am so grateful. I am so grateful that I pissed in my pants and fell on my face and got in lots of trouble and wound up here in AA. Because I don't know what earth people do. I don't know how they handle it. It's a crazy, crazy world. There's a lot to be afraid of. There's a lot to get anxious about. I don't know what I would do if I didn't have this program for living, this blueprint for life. I don't know what I would do. And what I would do if I didn't have meetings to come to and you to listen to and recovery. It's so great to be a part of this. Thank you very much.
Yeehaw! That was very good. I'm not entirely sure that I have never got a resentment during a meeting. In my little hometown there, we only have one meeting. If you do get one of those resentments, best you deal with it, because they're going to keep coming back. And hopefully you will too. Our next speaker is from BC, and I actually got to meet her a few years ago at our PRAZA out in the Pacific region, Maureen.
Hello, everyone. My name is Maureen, and I'm an alcoholic. And this is what a room that holds 1,830 looks like, eh? Oh. My sobriety date is September 9th, 1983, and my home group is the Quamichin Step Study Group of Alcoholics Anonymous that meets every Thursday night in Duncan, British Columbia. And if you're ever in the area, come and join us. There's a lot of people that found that know me, love me, I love them, that found seats front and center. And I know that they know that I am capable of resentments, and they're here to find out if I'm capable of getting over them. I consider myself totally blessed to be attending my third international convention. I attended San Diego in 1995 and Minneapolis in 2000. And one of the decisions that I made as I was going around and picking my meetings was that I picked them because I wanted help in that area of my life. So today, I am going to share with you only the parts of my story that have to do with resentments. I also have to tell you that I have put my experience on paper, and I will probably refer frequently, if not totally, to it, because one of my biggest fears is that I might stand before you frozen solid for 15 minutes. Mid-February this year, I was pondering one of my justified resentments. I go to my mailbox, and there from the General Service Office is a loving invitation to speak on what else? Resentment, the number one offender. How did they know? After a brief bout of self-pity and downright indignation, I come to the conclusion that God does work in wondrous ways. Since February, I have been given much fresh research and have done some character building along the last few months. I decided to go to the dictionary, thinking there will be pages of information on resentment. Not so. The definition I find is the feeling of displeasure or indignation at some act, remark, person, etc., regarded as causing injury or insult. Wanting a definition far more grandiose than the dictionary is giving me, I head straight for Bill's writing, starting with Language of the Heart. Again, no luck. There is only one reference to resentment. What about pass it on? Draft, nothing there either. On to AA Comes of Age and Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. Did these guys not have resentments back then? As Bill sees, it certainly gives me some food for thought, as does the big book, but it isn't until I attend my home group that I am hit with the fit for me. My home group is a step study group. Each week, we read from the 12 steps and 12 traditions and share on the reading. That night, the reading was step 10, and the following appears on page 90 of the 12 steps and 12 traditions. Few people have been more victimized by resentments than have we alcoholics. It mattered little whether our resentments were justified or not. A burst of temper could spoil a day, and a well-nursed grudge could make us miserably ineffective. Nor were we ever skillful at separating justified from unjustified anger. As we saw it, our wrath was always justified. Taking a trip down memory lane, I don't know how I was able to pack the weight of all those resentments before I got here. I remember the first one, age 4. skipping down the block and asking if I could play with the three girls at the end of the street. The answer was no. When I asked why, they said, because you're not Catholic and you're never going to heaven. And I got a plate full of resentments out of that first one. First of all, the three girls. Secondly, that I wasn't Catholic. And thirdly, to my parents, because we weren't Catholic. As the years passed, I continued to add to the pile. My elementary school teacher that said there was no Santa Claus, that same teacher for making me stand in front of the class with gum stuck on the end of my nose, reciting Six Little Ducks, complete with actions for two verses. My mother for having soft teeth and giving them to me. The dentist for the pain that was inflicted in those soft teeth when he was filling them. My brothers for being boys. Me for being a girl. My sister for being the favorite. My first love for dumping me. My dad for being an alcoholic. My mom for putting up with my dad. All these resentments and hundreds more are firmly rooted and generously nurtured before I ever pick up the first drink. Once I start to drink, the resentments multiply quickly, and my motto develops. I don't get mad, I get even. And vengeance is mine, saith Maureen. The longest that I ever planned one of my get evens was 2 years. And I pulled it off with unbelievable precision. The only thing I couldn't figure out was why I felt so awful inside. You know, like I should be patting myself on the back for all the work I'd done. And I just felt so disgusted with myself. But it was, oh well, just pick up another drink and start planning the next revenge. In my teens, the world and everyone in it became my enemy. My grades dropped as a result of my newfound friends, booze and boys. My school changes in order to try and pick up my grades. I am finding it harder and harder to relate to the other students. My roommate moves out, saying that I am a bad influence. Oh well, put her on the list too. This school thing is way overrated. These curfews are really curbing my social life. The dean of the dorm has obviously never had a drink and obviously has never been on a date. Quitting school and getting a job is probably the best way to go. That would certainly allow me to get out from under these people that just don't get it. And now for some new friends, ones that like partying and playing the way I do. Ah, yes. Finally, I have the freedom that I've been looking for. What? Pregnant? Now what? What do I do with this? How do I get out from under this? Run. The beginning of many episodes of running that I did. A long way away from home, by myself, through a horrible 7 months with a hard pregnancy and a very painful birth, and after all that, giving my daughter up for adoption. Obviously, there is no God, and if there is one, he's a punishing God. So I'm going to add God to that resentment list. I'm going to add the God that I don't believe in. And on it goes, like jobs and moves and first husband and first mother-in-law and more jobs and more moves and, oh, and finally anyone who really cared about me. By this time, drinking is the only answer for the rage and resentment that fill me to the core. I am like a pressure cooker. Without alcohol, the pressure just continues to build. I add a few drinks, and the lid starts to loosen, allowing some of the pressure to release. At times, more often now, I drink enough to blow that lid clean off, and just like a volcano, I spew some of the toxic poison that consumes me. People no longer want to be around me. They nor I am ever quite sure when the next vile eruption will take place. I am capable of only two emotions, yuck and great, and I drink to them both. This is who I am when I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was beaten and bitter to the core. I know nothing of resentment when I get here. As a matter of fact, looking back on it, though I wouldn't have admitted it at the time, I knew nothing, period. And so it begins. And the first time that I read step four, I could really relate to the idea that resentment would be the number one offender and that it ruins more alcoholics than anyone else, than anything else, because I felt that. I felt that in my soul. Every fiber was just filled with resentment, and I didn't know what to do with it. Slowly but surely, I listed the people, the places, and the things that have angered me. I looked at what those resentments do to me. I would love to be able to tell you that there is even one positive trait that surfaces when I hold resentment. There are none. Resentments affect my self-esteem, my security, my ambition, and all my relationships. There is never a time that I experience resentment without being selfish, self-centered, inconsiderate, and afraid. I never resent without blaming and becoming a victim. I came to you weighted down with resentments, and over time I was able to recognize their useless and how useless and deadly they are in my life. I hated my father when I got here. When he passed away a few years ago, all that was left to say to him was, "I love you." And I had cleaned up the resentments and the wreckage of the past. I've also been blessed for that to happen with the passing of my mother last November, and with some very dear, dear friends. In the work that has been placed in front of me to do, God saw fit for me to be reunited with my daughter. And so we met 13 years ago. And what a blessing that's been. I sat down, the first time I met her, I sat at the opposite end of the couch from her, and I was looking at my emotional clone. And yet she had been brought up in a home that was alcohol and drug free. And 3 years after I met her, she found sobriety. And she celebrated 10 years of sobriety in April this year. When I look at what resentment brings out in me, I do know how dangerous it is for me to indulge. Having said that, there are still times, more than I care to admit, that I will replay every dark word in the conversation, hoping that this time it won't hurt. I will reread the letter or the email to the point that I've got it memorized. I think they call that insanity. I often wonder why I wouldn't go and memorize the good stuff. Just something that I don't do yet. It is that replaying of the initial insult or injury that takes me into dangerous territory. Once there, a converted effort is required to let go. Again, from the 12 steps and 12 traditions, it is a spiritual axiom that every time we are disturbed, no matter what the cause, there is something wrong with us. If somebody hurts us and we are sore, we are in the wrong also. But are there no exceptions to this rule? What about justifiable anger? And of course, I'm sitting with this justifiable resentment at my home group reading this chapter. If somebody cheats us, aren't we entitled to be mad? Can't we be properly angry with self-righteous folk? For us of AA, these are dangerous exceptions. We have found that justified anger ought to be left to those better qualified to handle it. My motto today is do unto others as I would have them do unto me. This is a far cry from the getting even of yesterday. What is even more amazing is that my mind no longer entertains fantasies of revenge. The longer I am in recovery, the less I am able to tolerate the pain that accompanies resentment. My home group chooses to close our meetings with the Lord's Prayer. The line that brings my resentment barometer front and center is, "Forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us." When I am mindful of this statement, I see that only through forgiveness of others will I be able to forgive myself and receive forgiveness from others and from my Creator. Several years ago, I read Sermon on the Mount by Emmett Fox. And what he says about forgiveness is, setting others free means setting yourself free, because resentment is really a form of attachment. When you hold resentment against anyone, you are bound to that person by a cosmic link, a real, though mental, chain. The one person perhaps in the whole world whom you most dislike is the very one to whom you are attaching yourself by a hook that is stronger than steel. Forgiveness is the key for me. Once I am able to let go of the perceived threat, insult, or attack, I am able to look at me. Once I am able to surrender the belief that I need to like the people I forgive, forgiveness becomes more palatable. Liking and loving are very different things in my life today. As long as I hang on to resentment, I don't like me very much, never mind the other person. A wise woman once said, "If I am in conflict with one other person in my life, there is a 50-50 chance that it's me. If I am in conflict with more than one other person in my life, it's time for me to look at me." When I carry resentment, I am not only in conflict with the person I resent. I'm in conflict with myself and with my God. My spirit becomes heavy, and my emotional hangovers are far more painful than the ones I suffered while drinking. Carrying resentment stands in the way of me being of maximum service to God and the people about me. I arrived in Toronto on Tuesday, and I was resentment-free. Since Tuesday, my plate has become heaping again, or did. And so, over the last 24 hours, I have been in contact with a lot of people that care about me and I them. And everybody that I've run into, I've said, "Please pray for me, because I don't want this in me." Earlier today, three of us were up in our hotel room, and we had the opportunity of joining hands and having that current of love and fellowship just circle us as we said the step 3 and the step 7 prayer. So, I have achieved my goal for this time in this place. I stand before you resentment free. The poison of anger has been replaced with the sunlight of the Spirit, and I can thank God and all of you for that. Thank you.
Ooh, that was really great. Woohoo! All right, I'm not sure how Mike's going to follow this, but we're going to let him try. Here's Mike.
Hi, everybody. My name's Mike. I'm an alcoholic. I thought that going last was a good idea when I got up here. You know, there's more people in this room than lives in the whole county I live in. I'm from South Central Indiana area, Delegate Area 23, and My sobriety birthday's December the 26th, 1981, and my wife's in the audience, so I got to be careful, got to be honest. We look at one another in sobriety, and we have a saying many times, who would have thunk it? You know, who would have thunk this? You know, who would have ever imagined? How do you get from there to here? You know, and who would have thunk it? I'm going to go under an assumption that everybody in this room, with the exception of my wife, has had a resentment. I'm talking about the kind of resentment to eat your lunch. I'm talking about the kind of resentments, no matter what you're doing, where you are, you think about it. It's right in the back of your head all the time. You know, it's just right there. You know, you're always plotting, always planning. Some way you can get even, you know, or that's how I did it. I think everybody in this room, or you wouldn't be in here. That's why we're here. And we've heard some awful good stuff already about how we're supposed to deal with that. You know, I don't know about y'all, but I feel like right now I got my meeting face on, you know? Yeah, I got my meeting face on, you know? But if you want to know whether or not I'm working this program on a daily basis, go ask Faye after a while. That's where this thing really works, you know? Ask my wife. And I won't tell you what she'll tell you, but she'll tell me most of the time I do a pretty good job, and sometimes I don't do such a good job of working this program. But we're here to talk about what we do about these resentments, because I'm going to go under an assumption that we have them. But I wanted to say something before I started this. Happy birthday, huh? Happy birthday to us. Years. Isn't that incredible? I don't know if you all were in that presentation that was made in the room adjacent to this one a little bit ago on the big book, but boy, it took us back in history. It's kind of a, I guess what they call a PowerPoint presentation, sort of interactive with Bill on tape, and it was just incredible. Just took me back to some of AA's history, and I love Alcoholics Anonymous history. These deep-seated resentments are the ones that can drive us right back to losing our serenity. And you know, serene people don't stay sober very long. I've proved that to myself. I don't stay miserable and sober simultaneously. And that's what these steps are all about. That's what this program is all about. That's what this book was written for that we love so much, was that it can find a power greater than myself that can solve my problem. And my problem centers around me and my selfishness. I am convinced alcoholism and selfishness is synonymous. And a lot of my resentments and a lot of the hostilities that I've had have centered around my selfishness and my self-centeredness. Recently, we were talking. My home group meets in a little town, resort-type town in south central Indiana, town of 800 people called Nashville, Indiana. It's the Remember When group that appropriately meets at the Senior Citizen Center down there. And I'll tell you what, I'd hate to be the coffee person for this group, you know. But I'm convinced of one thing, and my friend Jenny taught me this a long time ago, that my home group is absolutely the best home group in the world that meets on Thursday nights at 8 o'clock in Nashville, Indiana. But we were talking about this very thing not 2 or 3 weeks ago. It's ironic how those topics can come up when you need them the most. And one of the ladies in my home group referred to the nature of resentment. She referred to it. She said, resentments are caustic. And boy, I thought a lot about that when she said that. If I ignore that kit of spiritual tools that Maureen just talked about that are laid at my feet, and I allow resentments to enter my life, I'm talking about those deep-seated resentments that fester, and every time I look at them, it's like I just put a videotape of what happened to me in, and I'm replaying that, and every time I play it, you look worse and I look better. Every time, you know? And if I allow that to happen, then what I've allowed to happen absolutely eats away, erodes in a caustic fashion the very spiritual life that I'm trying to build for myself and those around. And that it so directly affects those around me. And that the very nature, the essence of my being is supposed to be spiritual in nature, where I can now do, see, and feel what I could not do, see, and feel on my unaided will. And then I throw acid in on that. I've turned my spiritual foundation into the consistency of cottage cheese. That's what I've done, allowed resentments to do. That's how powerful they are in my life. I have shut off, I have run the risk of shutting off the sunlight of the Spirit. That's how powerful they are for me. And it's as if, I got a friend of mine who says he feels the power in his life operates on a certain frequency. It's like listening to a radio, an FM radio. And if he's tuned to the proper frequency, if he's, you know, then he's going to be in contact. He's going to have conscious contact with a power greater than himself. Well, if my God's broadcasting at 103.6 and I'm down at 92.3, I'm not going to hear what I need to hear. You know, it's just that simple. And that's what these things can clog, that channel, if you will, of communication. Resentments can do that. Bill reminds us, and Maureen talked about that, the anger and rage are best left to those that can handle it. You know, I don't know who those are, but it's not me. You know, and I'll be honest, I've spent a lot of my life mad about this, that, or the other. I don't know about you all, but I tell you something else I was thinking. There's sometimes I really didn't enjoy the resentments, but there's a lot of times I got a great kick out of them, man. I love fondling them, holding on to them. I loved it. I loved it a lot, you know. But for me, as we talked about earlier, there's just no such thing as justified anger, no matter whatever the provocation. Most of the time, these things sit around my own security, my pocketbook, my money, my resources, or my personal relationships. My self-esteem has either been threatened or hurt. And then we talked about this earlier, fear. When fear enters that equation, I don't know about you guys, but when fear enters into my life, it triggers everything else that's wrong with me. Every flaw in my character is magnified if I'm full of fear. And so I have to try to avoid that at every opportunity. Again, using the kit of spiritual tools that's laid at my feet. If I'm preoccupied with resentment, what I've done is rendered myself pretty much useless to myself, to my God, and to my fellow man. I've taken the seventh step prayer and I've thrown it out the window of resentment. Did I really mean what I said in that prayer, or did I just utter the words? Where's my heart? Is this a theory, or is this really a design for living? So, the 12 and 12 says, and I quote, "The attainment of greater humility is the foundation principle of each of our steps." I was thinking about that then. Maybe humility might be the insulation that I need that keeps me getting burnt from resentments. You know? And I'm not a very humble person at heart, you know. I've got an awful lot of bad habits. I got a bad habit of looking at a situation, analyzing it, coming to a conclusion, and I can't imagine you not coming to the same conclusion, you know. I got a bad habit of saying, you know, that's just my opinion, but it'll all be yours. Bill refers to humility as a precious quality. And if I'm going to live to any kind of useful purpose, or if I'm going to be able to summon up the faith that I need to get me through any emergency, then maybe it's humility that I ought to be trying to. That quality is the one that I might try my best to cultivate. These tools are at my feet, you know. That spiritual axiom that Maureen talked about, you know, I don't believe that, do you? Every time I am disturbed, no matter what the reason, there's something wrong with me. Well, what about that semi-driver that tried to run over me over here? You know? Remember that, Faye? You know? He wanted in my lane, and he almost killed us kid there. You know? Now, that guy just tried to kill me. I now have a legal right to kill him. That's how I look at it. It's a bitter pill for me to swallow, no matter what's wrong with, no matter... Anytime I'm disturbed, no matter what the reason, there's something wrong with me. What it is, it's my reaction to those things, you know. It's life's 10% things that happen to me and 90% how I react to them. But I've never been very skillful at justifying unjustified from justified anger. You know, my wrath is always righteous in my mind. And it's kept me emotionally and it's kept me spiritually off balance at times for long periods of times. And centers around jealousy and self-pity, envy. My pride gets hurt, you know. But I have in my life, and in particularly before my sober life, spent a lot of time allowing resentments to dominate my life, to control my life. Whether these were real or whether they imagined, the effect has been the same on me. You know, they've got the power to kill me. They have the power to kill me. Because if I allow resentments to stand in the way of my usefulness to myself and to my fellow man and to my God, then I become miserable in my own stuff and I don't stay miserable and sober. I've already proven that to myself years ago. And I can't simply wish them away. I can't just wish these resentments away. I have to use these tools, these spiritual tools that we've been talking about. But I love it. You know, you ever notice in Bill's writings, and I think I've read most of everything that Bill wrote, he always covered himself. You ever see, he would always find a way to, you know, he would make one statement and then he'd turn around and he'd make, you know, he says there's a spiritual axiom that no matter what the reason, there's something wrong with me. And then he turns around and he says, now you got to remember that when we deal with people who've wronged me, they're probably spiritually sick. Boy, isn't that nice? Yeah, that explains a lot. I ought to recognize that I've spent over half my life in that condition, being spiritually sick. I should recognize it quickly another. But I have to have God's help when it comes to this. I don't know about you guys, but I have to have God's help to show me the same kind of patience, pity, love, and tolerance to other people in those conditions that I would for a sick friend. Or I try my best, doesn't always work, to show that same kind of attitude I have for a new man when he comes through my home group door. And I always try to give that man 5 or 6 minutes of my undivided attention, give him my phone number, and tell him he's not by himself anymore. Give him a lot of tolerance and a lot of love, no matter where he may be coming from. Again, it goes back to whether I mouthed the words in the seventh step prayer or did I really mean it. When I offered myself to my God, when I said, take away the things that you find objectionable to me. Why? Because Mike's such a nice guy and I deserve it? No, because I can be of more use to you. So I can do what you want me to do. That's what this deal's all about, getting Mike out of Mike. And that's a full-time job, you know. I may not be much, but I'm all I think about. My wife is nodding her head. I love to argue. Ask the people at my area assembly, you know. I was a delegate. I was a panel 46 delegate at the General Service Conference. Ask those people. I love to argue. I'll argue either side. It don't make any difference to me, you know. But I got to watch myself. I have to be careful about that. Bill Wilson reminds us that nothing, absolutely nothing, pays off like restraint. Restraint of tongue and pen. I'm not too good with the pen, but boy, I'm good with that tongue, you know. But if I'm full of resentment, my ability to be tolerant and fair-minded and useful evaporates right on the spot. And if I react with kindness, courtesy, and here's something I learned from our General Service Office. Here's something I've seen whenever we get criticism at the public level. You know how they react? They don't. I call it dignified silence. Isn't that a great way to react to stuff? Boy, can I take a lesson there. Dignified silence. We have had our detractors, and that's how we react to them. But personally, when I have my own detractors, I have a hard time reacting with dignified silence. But if I can do these things, if I can react with love and courtesy and kindness and silence at times, you know what? I could probably come into harmony with almost everyone that I would meet. What an order! I can't go through with it. You know? I can't go through with it. I can't be that way. Fortunately, no one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. I'm not a saint. But the point is, I'm willing. As I stand here this afternoon, I'm willing to grow along spiritual lines. You know, those questions that we ask ourselves, or these points about being willing, become questions in my mind. Am I really willing to develop self-restraint? Willing to admit when I'm at fault about things? Just as important as someone else mentioned up here, willing to forgive when it might be somebody else might be at fault and forgive them. Am I willing not to be discouraged when I fall back into my old habits? I'm going to tell you all something. These disciplines are not easy for me. But the tools, where are they? They're at my feet. They're that simple. They're just that simple. If I go down to the hardware store this afternoon and buy a shovel, it doesn't come with an instruction manual. You know, it's the tools, the spiritual tools that have been given to me by this wonderful fellowship, by this wonderful program called Alcoholics Anonymous, are just that simple. And all I have to do is kneel down and pick them up. God bless us all.